They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Joining me on the show today is Andy Ostrowski, all the way from Pennsylvania. Andy, thanks so much for joining us today. You have... It's been a long time since you've been on and since we've caught up, and you've been really busy. So what's going on?
Well, it's good to be back, Shu. I think this is maybe my third time on your show, and I know that I have a program called Justice Served with Andy Ostrowski that we're in a little bit of a hiatus on right now and trying to step back and get reorganized. But it's always good to be back, and of course you were on that show, and we had a good interview. I got a lot of good feedback on that, and there's a lot going on. A lot continues to go on in my world and in the political world and the legal world, and just moving all these issues forward and until we get them addressed in this system that we work in.
The image I'm getting, Andy, is three worlds, and you're juggling them. You're juggling three.
Is that all? Just three?
Well, you just named three, right? Political, the radio, and the justice.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And, a lot of it's a coordinated approach. And I just really have firmly come to believe, I have a background, as some of your listeners know, that, as a 20-year civil rights law practitioner, I came across some problems in the legal system and wound up on the outside of it and continue to fight for that and have become an advocate primarily for court reform. And then every issue surrounding the courts that people come to and need access, and in your case, with the HOA industry. But I just have become firmly convinced that there's really a twofold strategy to addressing these issues. We need political reform and we need media access. And I never thought that I would be a politician. I grew up in my younger part of my career, aspiring to be a judge. I've come to believe that, the legal system is facing some issues that really aren't capable of being corrected in the legal system itself. The way we say it is, the courts can't police themselves. They can't bring self-discipline. And that there is a need for political reform on those issues. And in order to make political reform effective, you have to have a voice. And then we need media access to give us a voice. So, really my approach to this has been, a twofold approach with the media and the political angle. And of course, my heart and soul and my passion lies with, helping people through the legal system. I'm very accomplished, a legal practitioner with a very, very wide range of experience. So focusing primarily towards the latter part of my career on the civil rights issues. So that's where, you're right, that's where the third part of it comes in, because as we move forward, with the political reform issues and with the media access issues, there are still people out there, with cases in courts that need, effective, zealous advocacy. And, I try to reach out. I try to, stay in touch with that community and, come up with strategies and ideas to help people advance their cause through the court system.
As I'm listening to you talk, Andy, there's someone that I want to put you in touch with. She's been on the show. Her name is Carolyn Douglas, and she just wrote an 8-pound. I've never known anyone who... who sells Wolf's
Moon. I have been in touch with Carolyn.
Oh, you have?
Yes, I have. She and I have worked together. We've talked. You know, we haven't really established a consistent working relationship, but she recently sent me a copy of her book, and I know that she's trying to develop a program for instruction of people out there going through the court system and how to negotiate the court system. And I expect to be in touch with her very soon. I haven't had a chance. You know, I've thumbed through the book, and as you know, it is an 8-pound, 800-page book, but with a lot of good information. It's called The Dark Side by Carolyn Douglas for people out there, and it really starts with her personal story and what she's been through, and then transition that, because she did, she was a lawyer herself, and she was married to a judge, and there was a long history that started through the domestic courts, and just really led her to have some tremendous insights into what is going on in our judiciary and how it needs to be reformed, and how people can learn these things for themselves to help themselves out as they deal with their own legal issues through the court system. So we'll definitely all be in touch and keep moving forward on those issues.
Yeah, she's been on, and I do have her book. I haven't read it yet. I do plan on having her back on again. But here's what I like, Andy, because you talked about one of the strategies was media. And I discovered that you cannot rely on the media. I have had a lot of personal experiences with the media where the media has twisted things, going back to when they did an article on my father, the Washington Post did, years ago. And the lies were just incredible. The Washington Post did an article on me in 2001 when I had first started this show, and I found some quotes attributed to me that I would never in a million years say. So I called the reporter and I said, "Hey, where'd you get that from? I never said that." And the answer was, "Well, I assumed you meant it."
Huh.
So people reading the newspapers, and I realized a long time ago that people reading the papers are going to take it at face value because it's in print, they've seen it, and a reporter has written about it. And that's when I decided that this show had much more importance, because people who come on the show get to give their stories in their own words. I don't even try to tell you your story. You tell us your story. You tell us your thoughts. And so everybody hears from you. So it's a direct person-to-person information. It's not filtered. It doesn't go anywhere.
Well, and you're hitting on the exact point, Greg. When I say we need media access, we do. We need credible media access, and what you want to call the mainstream corporate media, or however you want to label it, has been rife with some of those problems, as we've really seen, through this past election cycle. And one of the grand appeals of Donald Trump, to the people who voted for him, was his recognition of that issue. So, we need voices out there. We need independent media. We need credible media. We need people to do exactly what you're talking about. Give it to the people unfiltered and let them make their own decisions, and not have these decisions being driven by the corporate dollar, and made in the back room of editorial boardrooms to advance political agendas and political causes. And that's exactly what I do, Shu, on my show.
Yeah.
I have people on, and I invite them to come on and tell their story, and maybe I'll try to play devil's advocate with them, or maybe I'll try to crystallize their points with them and restate them. But ultimately, it's their words that count, and that's
right.
The kind of media that we need. And if we can continue to build this coalition of independent media out there and really not be beholden to, our corporate masters, that's what we need to do. So every time there's somebody that does either a blog talk radio show or an online podcast or, a show like yours, and even the mainstream media, I try to participate, but it's not as easy to get your words in because you're on much tighter reins there, and they do try to drive the agenda. But it's all about establishing credibility, and the more people, the more voices out there we can hear being raised on these issues, the better it's going to be for all of us, because we're not going to be able to deny it at some point.
Well, it's not only that. The mainstream media, the newspapers, the radio and TV, the commercial stuff, rely very much on sponsorship and funding.
Right.
So if you get a developer who's funding something or a realtor who's got a big real estate company, you know, they're not going to give you the stories, or they're not going to give you the entire story. They're going to sugarcoat it. They're going to omit a lot of pertinent information. One person that I'm very, very pleased to know is Judy Thompson from the Kansas City Star, who's done a tremendous job with just telling people stories and getting those stories out there, because that needs to happen. That needs to happen.
And I have. I've paid attention to some of that. I haven't read it all, but I'm aware that that's going on. And, you know, you're absolutely right. You know, she somehow or other was able to get that access and to be given the freedom to address this issue. And maybe because there's no corporate puppet master pulling the strings there. But, you know, Shula, that, you know, as you're making that point, that's kind of the same transition that into the political arena. That's really, you know, the same dynamic that goes on with, and in particular in your industry, the HOA industry, that, you know, these legislators are so heavily funded by, you know, the builders and they, you know, the CAI industry and then all the people with the money, that, you know, they're reluctant to want to step outside of that. And they know that if they're going to risk going out and advocating for the homeowners out there and the people who, you know, are the disadvantaged in that playing field, that they risk losing that sponsorship. So, you know, it all comes back to exactly that, you know, follow the money and see who's paying whom. And then that's how the messaging is driven.
And it's kind of interesting, and it's very neat with the new social media that people have access to getting their word out.
Yeah, and, you know, that's what I've been limited to a large degree. And I say limited because, you know, it is free, you know, and we have a limited audience that we can reach. Our, you know, our friends on Facebook are limited to a certain number of people. I've got to start getting more active in Twitter and getting the word out that way. You know, but we're really running up against an issue there too that we got to start to try to address. And that's why, you know, when I do these things, when I do my show, when I talk about these issues, I just try to be so scrupulous, you know, of every word that I say to make sure that it's credible, because there are so many sources out there that have a non-credible spin, that put stories out there that aren't you know, vetted and aren't properly researched. And ultimately, you know, it's going to live and die on the credibility of the messengers. And you and I and people like us are messengers out here, and we've got to maintain our credibility, you know, do everything we can to scrupulously maintain our credibility, so that when other outlets fall, when other individuals are proven to be, you know, slanted or presenting mistruth or misinformation, you know, there's got to be, you know, the rest of us out there who know that we're doing this in the most credible way we possibly can. And, you know, there's tremendous limitations to this, too. I mean, you know, on the other hand, you know, the sponsors, the corporate sponsors, the donors, the benefactors, you know, there is a certain amount of freedom in messaging and research, and it frees up your time so you can do it more. So it's kind of a double-edged sword. You know, like when I do my show, I want to reach out to the other people, you know, the people on the other side of these issues. And in my specific case, you know, like I'm dealing with the Pennsylvania Supreme Court Disciplinary Board. I'd love to. You know, when I'm talking about the court system, you know, I'm talking mostly to people who are experiencing problems through the court system, and they're giving their perspective. But I would love to have, you know, somebody come on and counter what I'm saying, somebody to you know, give us the other side so we can have a rational dialogue, because it's only through the dialogue of the competing views that we can get to a consensus on what the real issues are and then start seeking the solutions.
Do you think we're going to start listening to each other? Because that's been somewhat of a problem recently. If you have a different point of view, you're sort of ostracized. And I've faced that. I'm sure everybody has. It's not just me. But there has to come a point where we can all sit at the same table and we can all discuss the issues and talk about it from different perspectives.
And you're preaching to the choir on that one, because it was really kind of tragic over this past election cycle to see the number of people who were cutting this person out of their, you know, social media circle or not listening to this. And, you know, people want to be reaffirmed in what their beliefs are because we hold on to these things, you know, at our core. As much as we are loving and caring and nurturing human beings, we're also political human beings, and we don't always understand why we are that way. And we hold on to those things as innate parts of ourselves. You know, I somehow or other, I've been blessed to be able to, you know, recognize that and to do exactly what you're doing. I mean, I don't ever want to cut off a voice. I don't want to cut off people that disagree with me. I want to invite the disagreement, because it's only through the disagreement, it's only through the competing viewpoints that we come to a consensus on how to best move forward on these issues. So, you know, that's really a very, very important, very key point to make.
I think what you're saying is pretty much what I want, is a substantive argument as opposed to just an emotional one.
And no question about it. Yeah, you've got to be able to, you know, be a mature, rational, adult human being about this and recognize that it's only through, you know, all the voices at the table that we come to a consensus. And, you know, if I can, you know, relate that to my political efforts. Now, I didn't get on a ballot this year. My hope, and I had a team of people together. We were going to try to do an independent run for, I was going to do United States Senate, and we were going to have independents run for every seat that we could up and down the ballot of Pennsylvania. And, you know, when it came to the planning stage of this, I kind of took the lead on it, and I really took the approach to this thing that I do not want to drive anybody's agenda. I mean, as long as we have honest people with open minds, you know, the voice from Fairfax, Virginia, and the voice from, you know, central Pennsylvania, and the voice from northeastern Maine or California, you know, they all have different backgrounds and different experiences and have been raised in different ways to believe certain things and have different values. But as long as they're honest and as long as they're open-minded, we can come together and come to a consensus on what's best for the people of this country. So when I was out there doing that, you know, people would say, well, how are you going to, you know, what's your platform? What's your agenda? My platform and my agenda is justice and honesty and truthfulness. And, you know, as long as we all are driven by these same core principles, then, you know, who am I? Who am I to know better than you? Who are you to know better than you know, Joe Sixpack out in, the state of Washington? And when we bring all this together, that's how we're going to advance our cause. It's about consensus building. It's about coming together and recognizing that there's power in numbers, and that's the richness of the First Amendment in particular, and why it's so essential to our democracy, our republic.
And I can see that working in some arenas. Unfortunately, I don't see that working very well in the HOA arena, simply because of the money involved. Looking at a $95 billion annual industry, and it's the homeowners who are paying it and the special interests who are getting it.
And that is the problem that we all need to find a way to overcome. And, you know, until people can lose their selfish motivations and their greed, and that's why, you know, the core of what you look for in people is honesty and open-mindedness. But you're absolutely right. It's all about the money. And that's, again, too, but that's, you know, that's something that we all have to take responsibility for. You know, we live in a society, we live in a country that has been, you know, built up around in you know, the recent, you know, half century or so about the pursuit of the dollar, about having and, you know, having more materialism and commercialism and all those things. And we're losing sight of some of these bigger picture issues. So it really is the corrupting influence of the almighty dollar that, you know, has us in the position that we want to be in. Because, you know, the way that I've come to say it is, you know, don't we really all want, and who out there doesn't want clean air, clean water, safe and secure housing, access to affordable health care, you know, and access to a quality education? Is there anybody in the world that doesn't want those things, that's not a complete sociopath or psychopath? No. The difference is how we come to those things and the influences that affect people as to why we can't get there. So, you know, I believe that there are, you know, some core reasons that you know, are the way things are. You know, we have given too much control to the corporations institutions in general in this country and our modern world, you know, the banking system and the court system. So, you know, those are the three issues that I see. And once you take, you know, once you put those things in their proper perspective and start seeing where, you know, the corrupting influences really lie, you know, they strike at the core of human nature. So it's all of us who are in this together. And, you know, we've got to come find some way to recognize that and to move forward and achieve all those things that we all want.
Any thoughts on how we can do that?
Well, the thoughts are, you know, and then that's what gets back to the political efforts. The thoughts are find a way to get behind candidates out there who, and you know, and this is not about me. I'm not on a ballot currently, but, you know, I really believe that the things that I'm saying are sensible. And there's got to be a way to, you know, find people out there who are going to give this access, this open ear, and, you know, so that's the thing. It's just got to be, you know, the normal common people out there, the listeners to your show, who are listening to what I say and listening to what you say and saying, you know what, that's right. There's a lot of wisdom in that. Well, you know what, people, if that's what you believe and that's what you want to do, then go out and do it. You know, it's not a tremendous burden to get your name on the ballot, and you don't always get your name on the ballot with a hope or an expectation that you win. You get your name on the ballot, you throw your hat into the ring, you put your voice into the dialogue to nudge the needle forward a little bit. And the more and more people out there that do it, you know, the more voices that are going to be raised, and the more, you know, it's going to break through. So I don't think that there's a magic bullet to this. I just think it comes down to, you know, good old-fashioned persistence and in the pursuit of justice and hard work and diligence and commitment to core principles. And, you know, if there's 25 people next year in Pennsylvania, you know, talking how I'm talking, you know, then those 25 people are going to reach, you know, a couple thousand people each, and those couple thousand people, you know, will have other people that they reach, and slowly but surely, you know, we're gonna drown out the alternative voice. And really, that's, you know, that was the message behind, you know, both the Bernie Sanders campaign and the Donald Trump campaign. That's the appeal that they had. There were people that were willing to get out there and raise their voice against this so-called establishment that has caused the conditions in our world to be what they are. And all those people out there who heard and got enthusiastic about those voices, you know, they're hopefully remaining engaged in the process now. And there's nothing stopping any one of them who have been inspired by the messaging that they've heard in this past election cycle to get out there and be the messenger yourself. You know, find a way to do it. You get out there and you collect signatures for a month or 2 months, a few hundred signatures, a couple thousand signatures, depending on, you know, what kind of office that you're running for. And just get your name on a ballot and have somebody look. You know, it's just such a, these things are so deeply ingrained into our national psyche and our individual psyches that we have this two-party system, and this is the only way to think, that even if you just show more names on the ballot and people start to recognize, wait a second, you know, there's more here than there was there. Then they start to question that for themselves. So, you know, when you ask about the solution, you know, the solution is to keep doing what we're doing in terms of, you know, putting our voices out and our independent media outlets and then running for office politically and hoping that there's somebody on your show today or somebody on your show next week who says, you know what, you know, those people are right. And I've got to get out and start doing this. So it's not a magic bullet. It's not a, you know, be-all, end-all prescription, but it's the only way forward. You know, Shane, I unfortunately, you know, don't like to always put it in this context, but, you know, there's really only two alternatives. One is either we recognize that there still are viable political alternatives to change this system, or, you know, you exercise your Second Amendment rights and just realize that, you know, it's going to take some kind of upheaval and revolution to overturn the way the country's going. I firmly believe, I'm not a violent person at all, never advocate that. I don't even own a gun. I believe strongly in the Second Amendment, but I do strongly believe that there are still political solutions that can be reached that will, you know, achieve the results that we're looking for, and that ultimately is the way to go here. And that's, you know, that's what the rest of my that's what my life is going to be devoted to.
So you've got Washington DC that's at the core, the center, that it's right here, but when you look at a map of the country, it's a relatively tiny pinpoint on the map. You've got millions and millions of people all over the place. You're advocating the political thing. What about people? See, I think there's more
I think the people have more power than they realize, and I think the people need to be able to get together and decide for themselves, hey, this is what we want, this is not what we want, and then talk about the alternatives. If you think that the way to go is A, and another group believes it's B, and another group believes it's C, then talk about the merits and demerits and try to figure out which works, and maybe you can take a little bit out of each pot and put something together. And then say, all right, Washington, you start listening to us. You have been ruling and pushing us around for a long time. We're going to tell you what you're going to do now. You work for us.
Well, and that's absolutely right. And when I talk about people getting out there and running for office, you know, I happen to start big. You know, the first office I ever ran for was the United States Congress, you know, because I believe that there are things that affect us nationally. You know, what goes on in this court system,
right,
you know, affects people in Arizona as much as in Missouri, as much as in Pennsylvania. You know, and some of these issues are bigger picture issues that we do need that voice for forcing this agenda forward on a national level through the Washington, D.C. Elected positions, you know. But that's a very complex question or point that you make there, because it does get to the real nature of what role that the federal government is to serve. And when I'm talking about people out there running for office, I'm not necessarily saying get out there and throw your hat in the ring for United States Congress or United States Senate or president or governor. You know, there's local school boards and there's local municipalities and there's township supervisors and commissioners. And, you know, so it does start on that level. And really all government, as they say in the end, is local. And, you know, what you're talking about is the exact solution, because, you know, there is a lot more power in the states, you know, to control things. And, you know, the federal government has really engaged in an overreach, you know, over the course of the last century or so. And local control does need to be taken back. And, you know, there's a lot of, you know, it just gets so complex, you know, where these issues are. But you're absolutely right. You know, until these voices are raised locally and people get engaged, it's not going to happen on a national level. So I'm 100% with you.
Great. So let's start planning a big get-together.
Well, let's do it. I mean, you talk about Carolyn Douglas, and there's another Janice Wolf Grenadier, you know, who I've been in touch with. And, you know, here's the biggest obstacle, Shu. When we're on the outside talking about these issues, you know, the one thing that, you know, the sponsored media and, you know, the politicians that they have is they have unlimited access to funding. You know, people who we're dealing with are people that are, you know, working full-time jobs and raising their families and trying to put food on the table and pay their mortgages and send their children to school. And there's a tremendous lack of funding and finance to organize, you know, because I am all about doing exactly what you're talking about, but it's just so many limitations to doing it that all we can kind of do is just keep slugging forward as we're doing it, you know, one day at a time, one show at a time, 1 hour at a time, one person to help at a time, until a break comes somewhere. Someone's got to listen to these things. Someone's got to, you know, maybe someone that you know will get this into the right person's lap, and they'll say, you know what, these people are talking about the exact great things. Well, here, I'll sponsor this. I'll organize this. And you know, there were, in fact, I've worked with a gentleman. I don't know if you've had him on the show, a guy by the name of Joe Sorge. He does,
maybe not.
He does domestic relations things. Well, he was going through, and he happened to, you know, he was a doctor, and he was out in California. And he went through a really tragic domestic relations case for years long. And he just decided, you know what, that's enough. And I'm done doing this. I'm going to put all my money into making a movie about this industry and organizing people all over the country. And that's what he was able to do. And they really got some momentum with that. I don't know what their current status is, but that's one group that's out there doing it. And, you know, it's a very difficult thing. I mean, it's all very ideal sounding, and it's great sounding to say, yes, let's all come together, let's meet, let's sit at a table and talk about these things. but the burdens in doing that while we're all trying to, you know, live our daily lives are enormous. But it'll happen. It'll happen. You just have to, you know, the way I say it is you have to have, you know, persistence in the pursuit of justice. And you've got to just keep on going and keep on going, knowing at your core that you're doing the right thing. And ultimately, you know, I don't want to wax too much down the faith thing, but it does come down to a matter of faith that, you know, I believe everybody out there, I believe that you firmly know in your heart and soul that you're talking about things that need to be talked about. You're talking about ending human suffering. You're talking about pursuing justice. And ultimately, these things, in my estimation, they come from on high, and we're in the pursuit of those goals. And, you know, justice is going to prevail in the end. And that's just where I come down on it. And everything I do is devoted to that, even though, you know, I'm not out there meeting with hundreds of people every day and organizing national meetings. But it's going to happen. And the more people out there doing it, the more it's going to happen. And, you know, there are so many, when you do what I do, Shu, you know, I come across so many groups where everybody has, and this is not a knock on anybody, but everybody has their egos involved, yeah. And everybody has their ideas and their agenda. Yeah. And, you know, when people start going against their agenda or yes. proposing alternatives, the tendency is to cut that voice out or limit it. Yes. I just try to get out there and encourage everybody to continue doing what you're doing. You know, if you believe that your solutions are the right solutions, then keep pursuing those solutions. Don't let anybody take you off your agenda. And that ultimately, you know, as these people are out there raising their voices and advancing their cause, there is going to be something around which we can all coalesce and unify and, you know, and rise up and really present these issues the way they need to be presented. And I'm just going to stick with it until that happens. And that's what I do. That's what I believe in. And that's the only way to do it. I've been doing this for a number of years myself. You know, I started by representing people in the court system. And, you know, it's just the court system. And I believe in the civil rights, the whistleblowers, the discrimination of the victims of, you know, government abuse, you know, police misconduct, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm not talking about I've represented public employees who, you know, police officers who have been abused by the system, who have been whistleblowers. And, you know, you realize that, well, the court system, you know, isn't being an access point for these people here. So, you know, you start looking at the deeper problems and, you know, from the outside. And then, you know, as I've looked at it from the outside, I've learned so much about this HOA industry and just the absolute tragedies. You know, people's lives and homes are being taken and their lives are being ruined. And it's happening in the domestic relations courts. It's happening in the mortgage foreclosure industry. It's happening across the board. So, you know, as long as it continues to happen, you know, we just have to continue down the path that we're on.
Yeah, I've been involved with the HOA story. I've never been personally attacked, so I don't know what it's like to be the target of a bad HOA. And that may be an advantage, it may be a disadvantage. I think it's an advantage in the sense that I can look at the big picture and not just see it from my perspective and just take big picture view of it.
Yeah, and you know what, that's really an advantage for your credibility, because, you know, what I find in people that are seeking court reform is it's so easy to, you know, put them off as, well, they're just a disgruntled litigant. You know, the court system didn't go their way. Yeah. So when you come at it from your perspective of somebody who hasn't had this experience herself, you know, it really does establish your credibility. You know, and this is another obstacle, you know, to these issues. I mean, I understand there are some 60, 65 million, maybe approaching 70 million people that are in HOAs. And, you know, there might be hundreds of thousands or even millions of people across the country who have gone through a bad domestic relations situation. But when you say, let's say, you know, between the two industries, there's 3 million people who have been victimized or, you know, believe they've been victimized by these systems. You know, 3 million people is a heck of a lot of people. But when you're talking about a country of 300 million people, that's only 1%. And that 1%, you know, people still, you know, that other 99% has been raised to believe that they live in a fair and just world, that we have the greatest judiciary, you know, judicial system on the face of the earth. And, you know, that is their operating presumption for their whole lives. And it is so hard to break through that. I mean, I dealt with it myself. I kind of have the same issue on my credibility that you do, that when I started addressing these issues, I mean, I went through my disciplinary proceedings, and I didn't, you know, sit and say, well, I'm a victim here, because I believe that there was some stuff, you know, in the background. You know, it's a long and complicated story, but, you know, I felt that there was some justification at some level for whatever reason that, you know, maybe I had to take a lump here or there. But I started seeing it through the eyes of others and what they were doing to other people. And what motivated me to get out there and start talking about these issues was not the fact that, you know, I lost my livelihood. I mean, I've learned a lot more to really shed some light on my personal situation and talk about that more. But it was about what I saw happening to other people. And, you know, when we're dealing with this, this metric of, you know, 3 million people out of 300 million people who we're trying to advocate for, you know, the task is, how do we reach those other 99% of the people who have no idea what we're talking about? I mean, you know, you just take your industry, you know, if it's 60 million people who live in HOAs, you know, that's a fraction of a percentage of the population of the United. Oh, no.
No, actually, it's getting...
No, I'm sorry. Yeah, I was thinking that. You're talking 20%, 25%.
Yeah.
But of that 20 and 25%, how many people are actually going through, you know, problems dealing with? Probably a small percentage of them, and as tragic as it are, and as much as they point to real problems, you know, you've got to first reach the entire population of people that are living in planned residential communities, and then from there, reach that other, you know, 60% of the population or 70% of the population who aren't living in these industries. So, you know, it's kind of the same dynamic at play. It's how do we reach the people that aren't going through this right now to let them know that that these are problems that are going to affect us all. They do affect us all, and they're going to get much, much worse unless we get them under control and people start listening to the credible voices that we're trying to raise now.
Well, I think one of the problems, and I've been involved with this since the late 80s, so I've been around for a long time, and talking to different people, the victims, the people who have been abused by the system, people who've lost their homes, people who've lost a tremendous amount of money, people who've lost their, you know, their dignity, have just really are people who have been suffering. Unfortunately, they only view the problems through their own prism. To
right.
them, the problem with the HOA is what they went through. They don't ever see the big picture. And trying to pull everybody together to work together so that we can do something has been difficult, because one person will say, no, the real problem is, and the other person will say, no, you're wrong, the real problem is. And then a third person, they all have their own real problems, but nobody is willing to look and say, well, wait a minute, we really have a much bigger issue here. It's not that I was fined. It's not that I had a hose out in my front yard that was not approved by the HOA. It's not that my children used sidewalk chalk in front of my house on the sidewalk. The problem is much, much bigger than that. Those are just symptoms of a really bad a really bad system.
Yeah, and I think that you and I are saying much the same things, and that's why, you know, we've got to give thanks to people like you, and there's, you know, Caroline Kubler out there, and I know Nyla Ridings, and a lot of the people that I've had on my show, Dave Russell, and all the names are escaping me right now, but I've had Ward Lucas, and I've had Dr. Solomon, and I've had John from Arizona, whose name's escaping me. That's
Sellers.
Why, you know, John Sellers from Arizona, you know, a whole bunch of people, and I don't want to cut anybody out, but there are a few core people out there who recognize exactly what you're talking about there. And, you know, it's not to fault or blame any of these people, you know, in your industry in particular. I mean, people, you know, where you live, where you choose to raise your family and send your children to school and attend church and engage in the community, I mean, that's the core of your pursuit of happiness in this country. And that is a tremendous disruption to these people's lives. And nobody wanted this. Nobody got into, other than someone like you, who's, you know, obviously been given a gift and a blessing to be able to do that. There's nobody out there who, when they bought an HOA, bought into an HOA, were anticipating that this was going to be a problem. And it causes a tremendous personal pain and personal upset. And everybody naturally is, focused in the first instance on how it affects their life. So we just need to continue to be compassionate and sympathetic and understanding to those people, and try to, just bring them along. And, because one thing that I've learned is, in the pursuit of justice, when anybody feels an injustice, it sparks a fire inside of them, and they start by fighting their case and pursuing that. And as they confront injustice after injustice, it's an evolutionary process to really broaden people's perspective, to, have the perspective that you do, and to recognize. And this is where ultimately why I say, political reform is the key. Because, maybe a point, and it's kind of what you do on your show. I ran for Congress, and I'm going to be running for office again. I don't know exactly how and which office, although I have some ideas. But I've tried to conduct my show, much like, a legislative committee would conduct a hearing on these issues. And that's much like what you do. You bring people on, you allow them to contribute their voice. And now, sure, you have 17 years of shows where you can go to somebody and say, look, this isn't just me raising these issues. You go listen to 17, 50 shows a year for 17 years. You've got 500 shows in the bank.
I have more than that.
I was thinking probably much, much more than that. But, I've got 100 or so shows, more than 100 shows. People out there are doing this, and we're building a database that, if somebody says, this is just you clamoring about your situation. I said, well, wait a minute. What about these 100 people? That's just 100 people. What about, on the Commons with Shu Bartholomew? Well, that's just 500 people HOA. Well, what about, we are just building databases of information and, so people can go back and say, no, they do have credible points to be made. It's not just about out there pontificating about what I want for me or what Shu wants for Shu. It's about, being a voice to represent what a lot of people. So, these people who are out there in pursuit of their own claims and churned up over their own claims and focused on, the chalk on the sidewalk or the wrong color hose or, the wrong color swing set or any of those sundry issues that come up in some of these HOA cases, it's just another voice to contribute. It's another piece of data that goes into the process. If we had a forum to present this, a legislative forum to present this information, you could go right through there, right to them with a CD or, media device or some sort or other with all your shows and say, here, go listen to this, here. If you don't believe me, go listen to, these 500, 600, 700 people who have told similar stories. And then go listen to Andy Ostrowski's show and the people that have gone through the domestic relations courts and the lawyers out there who have been disciplined because they've raised their voice against the system that's broken. And ultimately, Shu, for me, in many ways, all the commonality in many of these things, I believe it is because of my experience, because I've been uniquely placed into this situation to have this perspective. But ultimately, these things live and die through the court system, because all those people out there who have spent $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 on attorney's fees only to end up losing their home, or $20,000 fighting a $150 HOA fine. If you had a fair and open court system where people could go in and have access to justice, real justice, a lot of these situations wouldn't have gotten to where they get to. And then you start to do the follow the money thing. And in your industry, it's the CIA money, CAI money, and, the big property developers money that funds elections, that, funds local governments. And, when people go up against that, they're going into the teeth of a monolith. And it's very, very difficult to do. And it's the same thing in this domestic relations industry. I mean, these courts, have built the funding, you know, the federal funding, Title IV-D and Title IV-E funding into their equation, where they all have a financial incentive to, you know, perpetuate, you know, this industry. So, you know, to me, you know, a real focus, and this is how I got into the HOA issues. I started dealing with some people that were going through, you know, court proceedings, and they just were not able to get fair access to justice. And you start to unpack that a little bit and really see what the issues are, and you start to realize that, no, this is a justice issue. This is a breakdown in the justice system. I mean, these things should be able to, you know, people should not have to go and spend $20,000, you know, to fight a little $50, you know, HOA fine. And then have on the other hand, in your industry in particular, it really works that really, you know, these people's dues are going to pay the boards who pay the attorneys who fight against them. So it's really, really a deck that is stacked against the homeowner in the HOA industry in particular, because, you know, people just can't afford, and lawyers then, you know, people can't afford to spend that kind of money, and lawyers can't afford to do this for nothing. Yet on the other side, you have unlimited resources with insurance money backing it, with, you know, all the dues from all the residents of the HOAs backing it, you know, paying for the lawyers to fight these things. The lawyers then have their self-interest involved, and, well, they've got to make themselves look good for their HOA client. So they're going to fight this case, and they're going to teach this person a lesson. And, you know, that becomes a, you know, the real problem. And that's just so, so huge to really try to address that, you know, I hope that the impression that I'm creating, the impression that I'm trying to get, that this is why, you know, people start really need to start to look at this from the perspective of what's wrong with the judicial system, where we can't get justice in these cases, or justice costs so much, or and justice costing so much is no justice at all. I mean, that there's a huge injustice in that alone.
You know, you're talking about, and with you, it's going to court, and I think that the court should be a last resort. We're trying to tweak things. We're trying to justify a $150 fine. I find it absolutely horrendous that an association is allowed to fine a member for having a dog that's 3 ounces overweight, for having changed the numbering on their house so that it's a little bit bigger, so that in case they're needed, the fire department can find it a little quicker. I mean, the stuff that we get all involved with, and these people are allowed to fine you and ultimately take your house away because you've got a dusty mailbox. Andy, I'm not making any of these up. Every example I've given you is an actual example from the types of things that we see that we've seen over the years, that people have been fined for. Everybody wants to fix it so that it's easier to fight that. I say, don't allow them to fine in the first place. Get rid of that.
Well, and that's really, you know, that gets right to the heart. When I first got exposed to these HOA issues, and I'm still pretty much a novice. I mean, I've given people a lot of voice on this, and I've had a lot of experts on, but, you know, I'm not the expert that you are, or that Ward Lucas is, or Dr. Solomon is, or, you know, all these people out there are. But I do know the constitutionality of these things, and that is really, you know, that is, you're right, that is a huge problem. I mean, to effectively give law enforcement authority to a purely private entity and the right to, you know, take your home and impose whatever quasi-criminal or criminal penalties, or, you know, quasi-criminal penalties, based upon this notion that, you know, this is somehow justified under freedom of contract principles, you know, this really flies in the face of you know, what we believe about due process. You know, I talked about this in one of the very first pieces that I wrote about this back in 2014, that, you know, there's a United States Supreme Court case called Overmyer versus Frick, O-V-E-R-M-Y-E-R, versus F-R-I-C-K, I believe is how both are spelled, that says that when you are, you know, waiving your constitutional rights, those waivers, you don't just do that by tucking away something into the fine print. I mean, they've got to be, real clear and indisputable waivers of due process rights. And when you are ceding government power to a private entity and doing that, not being aware of that when you move into an HOA, that's a huge issue and very ripe, you know, for a challenge on that specific issue that you're talking about, Sue, this notion that, these boards are vested with some kind of law enforcement authority, because when you take away, the accountability of the oath of office and the public, public official's bond and, that kind of accountability, you're allowing it to be, subject to abuse by, most of the people who live in the HOAs are people who, they just want a peaceful home where they can raise their family and, sleep and eat and, just enjoy their lives. It's not, the people who, and I don't want to, sound like I'm insulting, but the busybodies, the people who have been disenfranchised in their lives or feel like, they're bored or, they're out there, then they get this power, they get invested with this power, and it kind of takes over and it really lends itself to abuse. Now, I know that there's arguments to counter all this from the other side. Well, freedom of contract and, get in there and vote these people out or you run for it. It's just not always that simple. It's just really not that simple. Ultimately, I think in many ways, there's some, many people probably enjoy their HOAs. They love having the uniform look and they love having their lawn cut and, the streets tended to, but they're looking at the, for the trees, and they're not recognizing, really what they're dealing with here, and they're dealing with, private mini governments with none of the accountability that our government entities are really supposed to have, and the ultimate accountability to the constitutions. These are, I agree with you 100%. That is a huge issue.
I think you're confusing the structure. I mean, they're confusing the structure of the association. They want all of that. They can have that. It's the governance that's causing the problems.
There you go.
It's the absolute governance, and you have to strip that. That you've got to get rid of that. There are two cases that I know of, one in Virginia that says that fining is unconstitutional, and both of those cases are on my website. Gilmore is the Virginia one. And then there's a Foley out of Rhode Island where the court said that the power to fine, the legislative power to fine, was unconstitutional.
So there was some planned community law passed by the legislature that invested these boards with the power to fine, and these courts found that to be unconstitutional?
What happened in Rhode Island in Foley versus Osborne Court Condominium was, and this went, it was on remand from the Supreme Court in Rhode Island. The judge looked at it and she said, oh, you mean that constitution? She says, no, of course not. She says, we don't have that power. So the real government, because of the separation of powers, does not have the power to adopt laws, does not have the power to find you in contempt of laws and then to punish you. That's why you have the separation. But in an association, all that power is vested in the same person. And
well, sounds like the court's got it right there. I mean, that's exactly what you and I are saying. And, as long as those cases are out there as precedent, I hope that your listeners are jotting down notes and they go to your site and they look up those cases, because that's the solution to every one of those problems that they're dealing with. But, of course, then again, we get up against the obstacle of, well, now they've got to go, they got a $150 fine or $100 fine or whatever it is. Now they have to go find a lawyer, to go fight this issue and make this constitutional issue out of a $150 fine, and it just becomes cost prohibitive, at a certain point. So that's another issue. And again, and then that leads me to the ultimate question of, the ultimate point that I was making, that these are political solutions. I mean, these things shouldn't fall on the individual to begin with. It shouldn't be that way.
No, I agree with you. I've been talking about these cases for 17 years. I want people to know about them. I've done a lot of shows on them, but the problem is that they're not precedents in other states, which you know.
And yeah, and they're probably not precedent in other states because, you know, the person in Monroe County in the an HOA who has a $100 fine, you know, can't afford to spend $30,000-$40,000 on a lawyer to go through a trial court and an appeals court and a Supreme Court and file briefs and pay lawyers, you know, tens and tens and thousands of dollars, you know, to make issues out of these things. You know, so they should be precedent. You know, I hope that if and when I get back to the active practice that I can take some of these cases and, you know, get behind some of these issues and make precedent out of it because, you know, and the fact that the precedent in another state, you know, should be enough to inspire legislators out there to, you know, rewrite the laws to recognize that, hey, wait a second, you know, we're allowing an unconstitutional statutory scheme to advance. But then you get, I mean, this is complicated stuff, Shu, because then you get to, well, these are some legislators who are getting funded by the, you know, the property developers and the, you know, the CIA.
And around and around we go, right,
and
Andy?
Around and around we go. This is where we started, yeah.
This is where we started. You know what? We are out of time. Andy, thank you so much for coming on and sort of talking about these issues. I hope to get back on the air soon. The more voices and the more shows we have, the better off we're all going to be.
Will do. And
I hope
thank you for having me on.
And I hope you'll be back on sometime soon.
Okay, Shu. Take care.
Thanks a lot. Thanks, Andy. Bye. And thanks for joining us, everyone.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.